What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Warriors HQ podcast. I'm Dieter Kurtenbach, joined by Wes Goldberg, and we're talking Giannis, because when you're talking Warriors, you're talking about Giannis. And Wes, we've had this conversation now so many times. I don't want to rehash a lot of things that we've already said, but now that Giannis is out of the playoffs, the Bucks losing to the Heat in five games, an impressive five games by your Miami Heat, by the way, our Miami Heat. We collectively adopted them over time. You're a little bit closer. Does anything change for you? Does the formula change at all when it comes to Giannis? He said last night to Chris Haynes that he doesn't want out. That's usually a precursor to actually wanting out. He is going to be offered a Supermax contract whenever this offseason is. I was almost about to say this summer. That doesn't exist anymore. Summer never happened. I don't know what he does with that. He is a free agent after the 2021 season. Obviously, there's some stuff that needs to be worked out before that, but let's just work through your mindset right now as it pertains to Giannis. You are very ardent, or were very ardent, that he's not coming to the Golden State Warriors. Are you still on that bandwagon?
I guess the only way now that he comes back to the Warriors, or makes his way to the Warriors, is if he demands a trade, Anthony Davis style.
Right.
Right. Where, and look, like you said, he told Chris Haynes that he's not going to do that. That was yesterday. Anything can happen between then and the start of next season.
Right.
So I do think that what happened to the Bucks, what happened to him in the playoffs, should force Giannis to look around a little bit more in Milwaukee and really give some thought to whether or not he wants to be there for another year. Mike Budenholzer is not up to snuff in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. He is not empowering Giannis to work on his mid-range game. I don't understand why every commentator and color analyst thinks that Giannis needs to be shooting three-pointers before he's even able to make a free throw.
Baby steps.
Got to work your way out there. That's just the natural progression. And I also, right. I think that he doesn't need to make a – he doesn't need to have a three-point shot. He just needs to be empowered to take mid-range shots. Those are the shots that Kawhi used to beat him and Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo used to beat him.
Yes.
So he needs to develop that part of his game. And he can't do that under Budenholzer because he doesn't empower anything in that range. It's all three-pointers and shots at the rim, which we know works over the large sample swath of a regular season, but not so much in the possession-to-possession nature of the playoffs.
Absolutely.
So if you're Giannis, you look at him and you're like, all right, this guy's not cut out to help me out. Chris Middleton, as good as he's been, wasn't good enough to carry them. The rest of that roster wasn't either. So he wants probably a better head coach and a front office that's willing to spend money on, and maybe some more all-star teammates. And I do wonder, like, this was Giannis's year, right? Like,
yes.
Kawhi left for the Western Conference. LeBron James left 2 years ago. Kevin Durant, by the way, is in the Eastern Conference, but was recovering all season from the Achilles tear. So
yes,
this was his best chance. The Miami Heat are only going to get better. The Boston Celtics are only going to get better. You know, the Brooklyn Nets will be involved next year. So maybe between that comment to Chris Haynes and the start of next season, he realizes, you know what? I don't want to spend another year of my prime with this Milwaukee Bucks team. That is now the only way I think that the Warriors can get Giannis. That is a big if, but that's the if that would need to happen.
And that if includes him specifically stating, I want to go to Golden State, make it happen, the same way Anthony Davis said, I'm going to the Lakers. Don't trade me anywhere else. I'm going to the Lakers. And anyone else you want to trade for me, I guess what? I'm not going to re-sign with you. I'm signing with the Lakers.
Exactly.
So deal
exactly.
with it.
He's got 1 year left on his contract. He's going to decline the Supermax because it makes no sense for him to take it now. Everything is building to him having one last run in Milwaukee and it being the talk of what we do and the rest of the league and every league front office for an entire year.
As it's currently structured, I don't know if he can make a demand to go to Golden State, though, because Golden State does not have the threat of actually signing him as a free agent after the 2021 season. I don't know how they could make the cap room without very overt moves that would signal it. Like, and you might as well just make those moves in conjunction with the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, I will say this. The two things that I have consistently held on to as to why Giannis to the Warriors is unlikely, and I've never said it's impossible, but unlikely. One is the Carmelo Anthony effect. It has not played out with Anthony Davis quite yet, but it could. And if they lose, it absolutely will be brought up. Carmelo Anthony wanted out of Denver. He wanted to go to New York. He was a free agent at the end of the year, but he forced the New York Knicks and the Denver Nuggets to make a trade. The Nuggets got some pretty good return for somebody they were going to lose for nothing. Really good return, in fact. And Carmelo Anthony wallowed in New York around nothing for years and years and years. Now, we can argue about if Carmelo Anthony was ever going to be a really winning player, but he did not have winning teammates on that team. And a main factor behind that was he forced the trade when he could have just signed, and he worsened the New York Knicks in the process. Giannis is looking at a Bucks team that's really good and a new coach who could honestly fix the problems where they don't play postseason basketball. They just don't know how to do it. It's the same thing you could argue with the Mike D'Antoni squad. They just don't know how to do it. And the postseason is totally different than the regular season, and something that we've missed, and it's on us in the media for not highlighting it extensively and pounding the table about this. It's something I try to bring up, but I didn't bring it up enough when it was happening. The Warriors played an entirely different brand of basketball in the postseason, in the games that mattered, in the games where their regular season style, which, listen, a lot of that translates over, their regular season style doesn't apply. And Kevin Durant was the epitome of that. The ball went through Kevin Durant time and time and time again because wings dominate in the playoffs. But they changed their style. They chose to change their style come the playoffs after the 2016 NBA Finals because they saw the trend and how it was going to be all about the mid-range and how it was all going to be about perimeter defense. And they needed to go out and get that guy. They did that in Kevin Durant. Totally different brand of basketball. But,
well, to your point there, Giannis, I think, is smart in those 2 points where he sees that. He saw what he knows the legend of Carmelo Anthony as a Knick. He understands what went wrong there. He saw what happened when Kevin Durant left Oklahoma City as a free agent to the Warriors and joined a team with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. That was completely loaded.
It cuts both
loaded.
Ways, is what you're saying.
Exactly. And I think with Giannis, he sees that things are different now. It's been 2 straight postseason. He sees that things are different now in the postseason than they are in the regular season. Cool. I won 2 regular season MVPs. Fantastic. I haven't gotten out of the Eastern Conference those 2 years. That's a problem.
Right.
I don't think that Giannis would want to join a Warriors team that doesn't have Klay Thompson. And so that's sort of the sticking point now.
And that's
not
and that's
enough
what
just
I'm getting
to have
at.
Steph Curry. Yeah. And
if you trade away a Klay Thompson, if you give up a Draymond and a Klay, or you give away just a Wiggins and every draft pick from here on out, and Eric Paschal and Jordan Poole and Kevon Looney, even that, is Giannis going to look at the Golden State Warriors? In that case, he might look at the Warriors and go, this is better. We'll be fine. It's Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson. We'll be A-okay. But if you have to give up the other 2 of the big 3 that the Warriors have, probably, and Wiggins, who knows? If you have to give up serious capital to get Giannis, as well you should, he might look at the Bucks and go, well, this actually might be a better situation long-term if we get the right coaching.
Right, and that sort of comes down to what, like, when we get down to the nitty-gritty of what Giannis' decision is going to be. No, you're right. He can't go to the front office and say, trade me to the Warriors. Can't do it. First of all, that's tampering. The league will investigate the Warriors for tampering for the next 10 years.
And, right.
But so he will do what all superstars have done. If he demands a trade, what all superstars have done.
Sign
with Clutch Sports. Exactly. And then provide the front office with a list of acceptable teams.
Right.
That will include the Warriors, and it will probably include teams like Toronto and Miami, maybe Dallas, with teams that have that cap space. Now, if you're
that's the thing, the cap space. The Warriors don't have the cap space. So those other teams on the list are much more viable options because you can pull the Anthony Davis and you can say, don't bother because I'm signing with this team after this. So you can trade for me. You can pull a Kawhi Leonard. You can trade for me and have me for 1 year. Guess what? I'm still leaving. I'm still going to LA one way or another. You can't do that. You can't put that threat out there with the Warriors. The Warriors have to trade for Giannis or they cannot have him without making it very obvious. And there will be tampering investigations from here until 2045 about it, as you mentioned, because it's like, well, they're clearly setting up for Giannis and they're absolutely kneecapping their own team in the present as to go get Giannis. By the way, that sometimes doesn't work out. I think we can also look at the New York Knicks in that regard, or the Chicago Bulls. There's a lot of teams that have failed in that regard.
And then you have to look. So you're absolutely right. So if the Warriors are going to get him, it has to be via trade. So then you look at the trade package that they could put together. If not, if it doesn't include Klay Thompson, which I don't think it should or would, then what you're looking at is Andrew Wiggins, the salary of Andrew Wiggins, making about $27 million. You need that to get to Giannis' salary.
Absolutely.
And what the Warriors can offer that those other teams can't offer is the number two pick this year.
Yes.
Miami's pick is going to be much better, and so is Toronto's.
Yes.
And the lightly protected pick coming from Minnesota next year. Mm-hmm. Top three protected, unprotected in 2022. None of those other teams can do that. Now, you can say, well, Miami's got Tyler Hero. They do, and he's a nice piece. But if you're the Bucks and you're trading Giannis, you want like a franchise building block in return. You want Zion Williamson in return for Anthony Davis, basically. And Tyler Hero just isn't that. Like, he's a nice complimentary piece.
Right.
He's been great in this playoffs, but he's not that. And then even you look at what Toronto can do. Pascal Siakam's a nice player, but he probably tops out as a top 20, 25-ish player. Again, mm-hmm. not Giannis, not a top 10 player that you can build around. So if you are Milwaukee and you want to find that player, doesn't it make more sense to get, I guess, two bites at the apple with a couple of draft picks? Even if this is a weak class, there's going to be a Giannis in this class, right? Mm-hmm. There's going to be somebody in this class who blossoms and surprises people. And,
yeah, that's fair.
And the same thing in the next class. So if I'm Milwaukee, I look at that package better than I look at Miami's or Toronto's, anything they could potentially put together.
Well, let me then throw this to you again, because we've talked about this point time and time again, and I do think it needs to be reiterated. Isn't it best for Milwaukee just to let him leave? Like, is it in Milwaukee's best interest to try to glean value? You're never going to get compensatory value for Giannis. And if you trade him, that looks like it was your choice. Even if it was Giannis forcing your hand, it was you traded away. Factually, you traded away the best player to play for your team since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Like, I don't think you can get away with that in a market like Milwaukee, in a market that they just built a new arena. I think you have to just go down with the ship if you're Milwaukee. You offer the Supermax. If he says no, you ride it out. You give him a new coach. You do whatever you can. You hope to convince him over the next year. And if he's gone, he's gone. But, you know, Andrew Wiggins and a couple of early draft picks ain't going to replace Giannis.
No.
It ain't.
No,
it ain't. And you still have Middleton and Bledsoe, and you still have all these, you know, problems, quote unquote. Which, by the way, Middleton played really great once Giannis was out. Interesting there.
I think anything short of a very public trade demand,
yes,
and Milwaukee keeps him, and that's it. Yep. Anything, like, literally, Anthony Davis threatened to not play.
Anything, oh no, he didn't short, play.
Oh,
he straight up held out. Play. That's all.
Anything,
folks.
Anything short of Giannis. That's all, folks. Anything short of Giannis holding out.
Yes.
And you keep him, and you write it out, and you say, "All right, Budenholzer, you're gone. You couldn't do it." And look, what do you do? I think you go out and get Billy Donovan, who was just parted ways with Oklahoma City.
Oh yeah, you better get Billy Donovan
in the regular season and in the playoffs.
Yes.
Go get Chris Paul, who he developed a very strong relationship with. Mm-hmm. Pair Chris Paul, top 15 player still at this point,
yes,
with Giannis, and a playoff player, by the way, with, yeah, Giannis. And now maybe you've got something. I don't know.
I'm into that. I'm into those two moves. Now, I'll give you this, because I think those two moves could be really big, and it still might not work, because ultimately, absolutely, as you mentioned, the Eastern Conference is going to be really good next year, at least on the top end. And Toronto should get better, because Toronto knows what they're doing in the front office, and they are, at least at the moment, the defending champions. Now we get into Giannis the person a little bit more and where he came from. This is a guy who was selling trinkets on the street in Athens not too long ago. This is a guy who got drafted out of the second division of Greek basketball. This is a guy who, listen, he's European, and Milwaukee is not cosmopolitan by American standards, but if you're living in the slums of Athens, Milwaukee, being the god of Milwaukee, is a pretty awesome thing. And I cannot think of a single instance, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I cannot think of a single instance of a European-born player coming over to the States and demanding a trade in a very aggressive manner, in the way that an Anthony Davis did it, or a Carmelo Anthony before that. I just can't imagine that circumstance. I don't want to overly stereotype here and put a pejorative term on this, because I think this is a good thing. But I don't think that there's an entitlement to European players the same way that we see with American players who grew up in a system that was literally built around them. You look at AAU ball in America, from the age of 10 on, if you are a superstar player, you are getting money thrown at you and anyone around you nonstop. And you get to the NBA and you think the world revolves around you and that you should be a billionaire and all this stuff. Because what else did you believe in those circumstances? You've only been told that since you were a child, a literal child. Whereas if you're coming from selling trinkets in second division Greek basketball and now you're the two-time MVP of the NBA, like, my life's gravy, baby. Now, maybe Giannis is the exception to that rule, but character-wise, I don't know him personally. I've never met him somehow, but like, he doesn't strike me as a guy who has the disease of more, as it's said. Like, he doesn't strike me as a guy who's like, I need to be in LA. I need to be in San Francisco. I need to be in New York. I need to be in Miami. I need to be in a glamour market, or otherwise I'm not maximizing my potential. Like, that just doesn't seem to be his MO. He seems very basketball driven. This is a guy who's wearing, you know, sweats to the games. His sneaker is aggressively boring. It took a while for him to get a sneaker. Like, I just don't think of him as one of these guys in the LeBron ilk of everything is part of this grand narrative. And that grand narrative is created to make money and to have this empire around him. I think Giannis just wants to hoop. And again, going back, if you make an aggressive trade with the Milwaukee Bucks to go get Giannis because Giannis says he wants out or he's not going to re-sign in Milwaukee, he might go to a team that is legitimately worse than the Milwaukee Bucks when it's all said and done. So I don't know if he's going to force his way out in any way. It just doesn't seem to be in his character.
I think more than just the European thing, flavor. Yeah. I think there's a point to the way.
I don't mean to be xenophobic or anything like that. I think it's a compliment.
But also to that point, we've never seen a player not born in the United States be as good as Giannis.
That's fair.
Like, he might be the greatest non-American born player we've ever seen.
Hakeem.
When all things are said and done, he could probably end up being better than Hakeem. But there is something to be said also of he's been in America for 7 years, and humans, whether or not you grew up in Europe or Africa or America, always tend to want more than what they have. It is human nature. You could not fault Giannis if he looked around over this last week and a half and said, I want more than this. That said, I think what we did learn very much about Giannis's personality in these playoffs is when the game is on the line and when he needs to go in total like kill mode and basically say, look, I'm picking up Jimmy Butler, the hell with your coaching system or something like, look, I know you don't want me taking mid-range shots, but I'm going to take them anyway. I know you don't want me working on them, but I'm going to take them anyway.
I know what needs to be done.
And he's got this like brand of like this Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Mamba mentality thing. But those are what those guys would sort of do. They would take that over. But he's been sort of trying to, like you said, he just wants to hoop. He's doing all these things. He's a basketball purist.
He's a team
like
player.
Like MJ and Kobe were. And I just don't see him having that sort of instinct. Now he's 25, and this might have been the moment where he develops that instinct and says, I will never end up in this situation again. Michael Jordan, by the way, had to do that. He wasn't like that at 25 years old.
Absolutely.
So maybe this is where things turn. And if this is indeed where things turn, I still don't see him demanding a trade out of Milwaukee, but I do see him willingly leaving as a free agent. And that's what Milwaukee Bucks fans don't want to hear, is that they said, a lot of them go back to that, and it is slightly more xenophobic, where they say, well, he grew up in the slums of Greece. Why wouldn't, like, Milwaukee's a freaking kingdom compared to that. He'll never leave. And it's like, it's not like he's locked in Milwaukee. It's not like he's been quarantined.
Right.
He's taken trips to San Francisco, LA, New York, Toronto, Miami. Like, he sees these
places. Let's just leave it on the hoops. You mentioned that, okay, he doesn't have that killer mentality. He wants to stick with the system. I can think of two teams in major markets that really enjoy the system, and that's the Warriors and the Heat. Those are the two teams. I mean, those teams, you don't go outside of the system. You don't get to override it because you're a superstar. How many people have derided Steph Curry because he does what's asked of him? And he's not, you know, this gung-ho, like, give me the ball, I'm the man. He's going to run the system. And if the best play for the Warriors at that time, as per Steve Kerr and Draymond Green, and at the time Andre Iguodala, because if they had an objection, they would certainly raise it. Like, if the best play was, Steph, you go stand in the corner. You go stand in the corner, Steph, and Steph would never, never complain about it for a half a second. You have the same thing. The system is above everything in Miami, above everything. For a glamour market, for them to be as blue collar as they are is flabbergasting, considering where they came from, by the way, not too long ago when it was all glamour. But the system has overridden everything. Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley as a 1-2 punch are as strong as any operation in the NBA, on par with the Spurs even perhaps. And we know how successful they've been as a system over everything team for years and years and years. I can see Giannis seeing a better basketball landscape elsewhere. Basketball landscape. It just so happens to coincide that those are two glamour markets in the NBA as well. Now, he can also say, hey, I really like Oklahoma City's way that they played basketball, but now Billy Donovan's gone, and maybe that will work out well for Giannis in Milwaukee next year. I think he stays. I think that they hire Billy Donovan. I really like this Chris Paul rumor that's floating around out there. I don't really think it's a rumor. I think it was somebody who had a really good idea, and now everyone thinks that they – everyone else likes that idea, so they're sharing it. But it's a really – that's a really interesting – that would be an interesting development. But ultimately, I don't know if it's going to be enough because they'll still probably have Eric Bledsoe on their team, and Eric Bledsoe cannot be trusted. And I think that a lot of teams are going to be maneuvering in very overt ways, the Warriors included, to try to put themselves in a position to get Giannis. How do you see it shaking out? Do you imagine he hits free agency?
I do. I think he plays – I think – I honestly – look, Milwaukee still put up the best record in the league. Mm-hmm. Chris Middleton is still an all-star caliber player. The roster is still deep, even though it wasn't against Miami.
Right.
You've got pieces where you could put together a package for Chris Paul, and maybe that does include Eric Bledsoe then, so you don't have that postseason problem anymore. And you sort of now have the – and look, everybody was kind of saying, like, maybe it is – you know, Richard Jefferson had a tweet, is Giannis less Michael Jordan? Maybe he's Scottie Pippen. I think Giannis is more Shaquille O'Neal, and what he needs is a Kobe Bryant. Mm. And if what he is Shaq, and he just dominates by the rim, and he's maybe the most dominant player on a possession-to-possession basis the league has –
right.
He just needs a Kobe to take that mid-range jumper, to take that shot in the end. And you can argue that maybe Middleton should have been that guy over the last couple of years, but he's just not that not that level of player. Chris Paul is, or he's certainly closer to that than Middleton is. And so
Chris Paul's got some real son of a in him, if we haven't learned that by now.
And so now, and like, you can put that package together where you don't have to part with Middleton. So if you could do Chris Paul, Middleton, and Giannis, hell, play Giannis at center. Who cares?
Do it.
If you need to get rid of Robin Lopez, go ahead and just surround those guys with shooters. And maybe that plus a Billy Donovan type of hiring would be good enough to get out of the East. You don't know until you try it. I think that's what everything is setting up for, one final run in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And it'll basically be championship or bust for the Bucks next season. And at that point, he'll enter free agency and he'll either re-sign with Milwaukee or probably Miami or Toronto.
How much money do you have to give Billy Donovan to show up for possibly a one-and-done situation? If you remember the timeline, please let me know. Didn't they hire Billy Donovan in Oklahoma City before Kevin Durant left, or was it immediately after? So he had 1 year.
He did have 1 year, and if you're Donovan, maybe this is just what you do. I don't know. But
it's a weird kink.
It is, but it's you can't not take the chance to coach a Kevin Durant, just like you can't leap at the opportunity to coach Giannis.
That's really interesting. All right, let's play the game where the Warriors still hold the number 2 overall draft pick. And last podcast we talked about the rumor mill swirling, and this is a legit rumor. This is one that's actually going around with people that I know and trust. That. I can't friggin' believe it, that LaMelo Ball might go number 1 to the Minnesota Timberwolves. In which case, the Warriors, I can tell you right now, I don't know if Anthony Edwards is truly number 1 on their board, but he's sure as hell higher than LaMelo Ball on their board. And so that would leave Anthony Edwards available to the Golden State Warriors with the number 2 overall pick, which is just about the best case scenario the Warriors could possibly imagine, because not only do you get the guy that you probably would have taken had you had the number 1 pick if you can't trade it, but you're also getting to pay him a little bit less. So that's a big win for old Joe Lake up there. You broke him down, Anthony Edwards, for the Bay Area News Group. You're going to do this with a bunch of guys, but we start with the guy who I think we're in agreement is the best player available to the Warriors and in general in this very weak draft. When you dove deep into Anthony Edwards, when you went beyond the level that we've been at for the last couple of months now, because Lord knows he's not exactly an unknown commodity at this juncture to Warriors fans, what was the thing that stood out to you most? What was the thing that maybe popped for you in this bout of analysis as opposed to prior ones?
So Steve Kerr likes to say this thing where he likes to focus on what a player can do rather than what that player cannot do.
Yeah.
And I think the knock against Anthony Edwards is the efficiency numbers. It's bad. He's shooting 28% on catch and shoot. He's committing turnovers. He's not great at creating all these things. Defensively, there are major concerns. He's just flat out lazy, gets beat off the dribble a lot, doesn't rebound. I get it. These are things he can't do. But what he can do is the one thing that I haven't seen in another player in this draft be able to do at that level. And that's just create his own shot. And to go back to what has stood out to me in these playoffs is that ability to create your own shot is so novel. It is so rare and is so often overlooked.
Yes.
That you can't pass up an opportunity to go get a guy who even flashes that, because it's rare. There was a, I can't remember what game it was. I think it was Georgia Auburn. And I was watching film on that game.
Good game for you, by the way, with a couple of guys in that game.
That's the reason I picked it. Yeah. I mean, Okoro didn't look great in that game, but, Anthony Edwards brings the ball up, gets the ball above the break, beyond the 3-point line on the right side, and takes a James Harden-esque step back jumper. And he completely missed it. But I still almost fell out of my chair because he had the audacity to take it, and it looked good. Like looked like he had been clearly working on it. That's just not a thing that another player in this draft is really doing. He's got this, he's got great footwork. He's got such great feel for the game. By the way, he's only started playing basketball full time as a sophomore in high school, after, you know, a lot of these kids have been doing it in AAU.
Yeah.
So that shows to me he's got such a natural feel, and you can't replace that ability to have the footwork, have the feel, mimic footwork, see James Harden take step back jumpers. And I'm assuming he's never been coached by James Harden. So just be able to see it like a virtuoso guitar player hearing a song, like just see it and then do it. I wonder if the Warriors also see that and going with Steve Kerr's mantra and saying, yeah, that's a thing that nobody else in this draft can do. And if you're looking, if you're the Warriors and you're looking for the next face of a franchise, then he's got the best upside for that, because he gives you that ability to create shots. So that, to me, more than anything, is what stood out with Anthony Edwards.
So the player comparisons that you gave, and I am always wary of player comparisons, even though I think that they serve an extremely good purpose for the casual fan. But we all know that every player is unique, and it's usually a love child, a 2 or 3 player love child that turns into one guy. And that's about as good as we can do. But the player comparisons, I think, are apt from what I've seen. And I've not jumped into this as well as you have, certainly. But Victor Oladipo, Donovan Mitchell, Dion Waiters, I want to bring up the last one a little bit later. Tell me those guys I can see. That's kind of the best case scenario, well-rounded scenario in Oladipo, and then Dion Waiters maybe the worst case scenario.
That's basically the option, yeah.
So what do you see in him that makes him a Donovan Mitchell type? Is it just that audacity, that shot creation, that give me the ball, I'm going to make stuff happen? Did you see that at Georgia? Because it's not as if there were other options really available to the Bulldogs last year. I'm pretty sure that Tom Crean just said, do whatever it is you need to do. You're our only hope. And it got by. There is a difference when you now have really good players around you at the NBA level. Did you see that kind of dog that you see in Donovan Mitchell? You saw it at Louisville, and you've especially seen ever since. I mean, the second he came into the NBA, he became an alpha. Do you see that in Edwards?
I do. Georgia had only one other player on that team that shot more than 10 attempts per game. And so they basically had two guys on offense. Yeah. And so, I think with Anthony Edwards, yes, he's getting all the shot attempts. The usage was what it was. But he also wanted the ball at the end of games. He was coming back to the ball. He was fighting over. Like, they started playing him off the ball a little bit more as the season went on, because he wasn't as efficient with the ball in his hands as they liked. And even in those moments, he would fight over the screens. He would, you know, throw guys off him, and he says, give me the ball. Mm-hmm. And so I love that. The other reason I make the Donovan Mitchell comparison is that first step that Anthony Edwards has is better than Oladipo's first step. And it is it's similar to what Dion Waiters' first step was at Syracuse, and certainly to what Donovan Mitchell's first step has been in the NBA. And so you love that first step, ability to get to that second level of the defense and then finish at the rim with this sort of explosiveness. That's what reminds me of Donovan Mitchell's, because we've seen with Donovan Mitchell, you can work on your mid-range game, you can work on your 3-point shot. It doesn't have to be efficient right away. But if you have that ability to just explode to the rim and finish with ferocity and with efficiency that way, which I think he'll only be able to do better at the NBA level when he's actually playing with other offensive players and playing in space, then all of a sudden I think that he's going to have sort of this pet thing to go to, which is only going to help keep him on the floor.
Well, and beyond that, you can easily develop from that burst. And we've seen Russell Westbrook win an NBA MVP off of that burst. And then the stopping on a dime. And now I have an open 12-footer because you have to concede that to me, given the fact that I'm more athletic than you. And that's really something that the Warriors have been missing dramatically. I mean, Klay Thompson is not the most athletic guy in the world. Now, he's sneaky athletic, but he's like an all-around athletic. He's more yoga than he is sprinter, right? And Steph Curry is crazy athletic, but he's more of a contortionist than he is a bodybuilder. Like, you just don't have that guy who you put the ball in his hands and he has that spark. He has that burst. And even with Kevin Durant, he was just so much more physically gifted than everybody else. He didn't seem to have that burst, but you weren't going to do anything because he's also 7 feet tall and shooting it above his head. So good luck blocking it. I don't need any separation. Let's hammer this Oladipo point though. Oladipo's a really well-rounded player. He can play point guard. He can play combo guard. He's a really solid defender. What did you see in Edwards that made you think, because Oladipo would be fantastic, and we've even talked about him as a possible trade option for the Golden State Warriors and providing them something that they need, perhaps off the bench, but certainly in a closing lineup. What did you see with Oladipo? I understand the offense, but on defense, what was similar with Edwards and Oladipo? Because as far as I understand it, this boy doesn't play any defense.
That's right. And look, I mean, offensively, that's sort of the other way. If he's not on the ball at the NBA level where he could develop into a Donovan Mitchell, he's probably playing some sort of combo on ball, off ball stuff, which is basically what Oladipo does.
Right.
And, you know, you can afford to develop in different areas that way. But defensively, he's long like Oladipo is. He's built like Oladipo is. And look, Oladipo was a good defensive player in college.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Edwards was not. But I think as a front office, you're asking yourself, was Anthony Edwards not good because he was asked to do everything on offense? Mm-hmm. Or was he not good because he's simply disinterested on defense? And what he needs, and I think the answer is probably somewhere in the middle, right?
Right.
And
right.
If you ask me, it's probably a little bit more on the was disinterested in defense side. Mm-hmm. But Georgia also wasn't good. And stakes is usually what brings out defensive energy, defensive effort. And so they didn't have that last season. But if you put him with Golden State at number two, he's going to be motivated, whether internally or externally, by Draymond Green to play some defense. And and he's got all the makings of an elite defender. I mean, this is he's like 6'3", 6'10", wingspan, unbelievable build, super quick, super athletic. Like, if he wants to stay in front of you, he can. And he could stay in front of you whether you play point guard, shooting guard, or small forward. And with maybe a 6'10 wingspan, potentially power forwards with the way the NBA is going, he could guard three or four different positions. And if, like, this is a guy who played, you know, running back and cornerback in when he was playing high school football. If he played corner, there's an ability to stay in front of guys. And I kind of like that. Like that. Yeah. And I think that's a lot of where the footwork comes from on offense. And
I like
When you have that sort of footwork, and you have that basketball feel, that stuff, and plus the athleticism, obviously, that stuff translates typically to defense. You're not going to just be a bad defender. It's just if you show interest, you will be a good defender.
It's going to be really interesting to hear what the Warriors are hearing about his personality, his temperament, his character, because that says so much about if you have the mentality to play defense. And I'm glad that you brought up football, because this is something that I'm living every day as football season's beginning. Defense isn't about necessarily just physical skills. Hell, the entire sport of football is not just about the physical skills. You obviously need elite physical skills to be in the NFL. You also need to be a little crazy. And to be a great defender in the NBA, listen, it is not an attrition sport where your body is absolutely sacrificed day in and day out the way it is in the NFL, but you got to have a little crazy in you to be a good defender. It's just not a glamorous thing to do.
That's why I go back to like his competitiveness at the end of games. You like to see that, right? Like, maybe he's not going to be this.
Well, did you see it? Did you see it on the Did you see it on the defensive side? Did you see him say, like, give me that guy? Did you see that thing that we asked from Giannis, which I don't know if that's fair or not, but that thing that now is a talking point. Did you say, give me that guy? I'm our best defender. Give me that guy.
There was a game Georgia played. It was Arkansas, and I forget his name right now, but he was the leading scorer in the SEC.
Yeah.
And in that game, Anthony Edwards.
Don't worry about it.
I have no idea. Anthony Edwards said, give me that guy. Go guard that guy. I was reading an interview, and Tom Crean, the coach of Georgia, said Anthony Edwards wanted him. And so you love to see that. Now, the problem with that is that the SEC leading scorer averaged 24 points per game during the regular season, and he was the leading scorer with that, and he scored like 26 or 27 points in that game. So he went above his average against Anthony Edwards. So that's a little problematic. But if you're not in practice, you're gonna, that's going to happen. And so I think if once he gets to the NBA level, he's with NBA coaching, I have confidence, having never met or talked to Anthony Edwards, I still have confidence based on what I've seen in the film, that on, with the right coaching staff, that he can develop into not just a good defender, but like an all NBA level defender. I think he could be that good. Wow.
Mason Jones is his name.
There he is.
He led them in damn near everything last year. 22 points a game, 35% from beyond the arc, 45% field goal. He's a pretty good offensive player. Maybe we should be looking at Mason Jones down the line here. The name that I left out on your four-player comparison here was Jaylen Brown, because I'm having a hard time seeing that. Jaylen Brown is a prototypical 3-and-D wing. I can see where you're going at with the length, but Jaylen is going to be and is – defense first, then comes around with the offensive game. Just a classic three. A classic three who can slide up to the four. For Warriors fans, think about Harrison Barnes, but better, like much better. And Harrison Barnes was a pretty good player in his own right back in the day. Is that just the wingspan? What else are you seeing that brought Jaylen Brown to mind? Because, again, I've watched this kid enough that Jaylen Brown was not a name that popped into my mind.
It's situational more than anything. Think okay. about Jaylen Brown in his season at Cal. He was asked to do way too much.
Do I have to? Because it was not a good year. I covered that briefly. Team a lot.
We'll leave soon. Just go back there for a minute. Okay. Come with me. It's better than what's going on outside.
Yeah, for sure.
So Jaylen Brown is 1 year at Cal under Konzo Martin, was asked to do everything on offense, and that's just not the sort of player he is. So what did he do? He put up really inefficient numbers. He wasn't as good defensively as he thought he could be, despite the wingspan and the athleticism and the build and all these things. He was inefficient and disappointing on defense, much like Anthony Edwards is in his 1 year at Georgia, for a lot of the same reason. Now, I'll argue that Tom Crean actually put something in place more than Konzo Martin did, but Tom Crean didn't have the recruits that Konzo Martin did.
Right.
So that was the difference. But Anthony Edwards, still within that context, asked to do more than he should have been asked to do.
Okay.
I think Anthony Edwards on his last, or I should say, Anthony Edwards, his first day in the NBA will be a better player than his Anthony Edwards the last day at Georgia, just because he's going to be playing with other NBA players and presumably within more space and with a better, you know, system around him, and asked to do a lot less. And when he's asked to do a lot less, he can develop, I think, the way that Jaylen Brown developed, where that length and that size and athleticism is now on the forefront. He's able to play off the ball, close out on the weak side and get a bunch of blocks, get some jump passing lanes and get steals, use athleticism to finish at the bucket, and then with time, like Jaylen Brown did, develop a handle a little bit more, develop some efficiency from three-point range and from the mid-range game. But in the meantime, go play defense, go rebound, hit open shots, and we pass it to you. That's all you got to do year one, and then you develop that way. I think his development can be very similar to Jaylen Brown. I actually think because of their bodies, Jaylen Brown's a little bit taller, but the wingspan's almost the same. Could end up playing a very, depending on where he goes, could end up playing a very Jaylen Brown-like role somewhere.
Well, the Jaylen Brown role is very similar to the Kawhi Leonard role. Now, obviously, it has not reached that high, but that's a guy who comes into a good team with the expectation of being able to develop, play a role. But, you know, listen, down the line, you're going to have to take over. You're going to have to be one of our dudes. It's the same as a Jason Tatum role. Now, I don't think that anyone wants to compare Anthony Edwards to Jason Tatum, because if it was that obvious of a connection, it would be that obvious of a pick at number one overall. But I like where you're going there. That's interesting.
And Jaylen isn't Jason Tatum, right? Jaylen Brown is more of your number two option, maybe a number three option. That might be where Anthony Edwards tops out. And that's okay. That's still a really good player, especially
Warriors
if need
Steph
Curry on your team.
Who are you looking at next? Who's the next person? This was a really fantastic scouting report. Wes has even more than he just gave us right here on the Mercury News website. Who's next on the list?
Haven't yet decided. It's either – I
who
might
do you
just
want it
go
to be?
Down the – I kind of want to go with LaMelo Ball. I want to just break down his game a little bit more. I'm not – look, I don't think the Warriors are high on LaMelo Ball. I don't think they're high on James Wiseman, but these are sort of the consensus top guys, so it makes sense to include them in this breakdown as we ramp up to the draft.
Of course.
But, I've not been impressed with LaMelo Ball, and I'd be really interested to see if I can find something I like when I break him down a little bit more than I already have.
Well, I liked everything that you've just said about Anthony Edwards. If I wasn't already in, I feel very in right now, and you're not a sugarcoater, so I greatly appreciate that. Let's talk about the playoffs at hand. Let's talk about, you know, Jaylen Brown a little bit here. Boston's up 3-2 on Toronto. It's going to be Boston, Miami, in the Eastern Conference Finals, as we all predicted. Though to be fair, I had you on the radio show plenty, and we talked about Miami. Obviously, you being a South Florida kid, loving the Heat growing up, like you were high on them. We were both very high on Boston. Like we thought that this could happen. It wasn't like it was totally out of the realm of possibility. Didn't expect it to go like this, like exactly like this. And then in the Western Conference, you have the Lakers up 2-1 on the Rockets, and then the Clippers, as expected, up 2-1 on Denver. Denver's scrappy. I just think the Clippers are a much better team. They can play more than 10 minutes a game, flip the switch all-stars like the Warriors were back in the day. They'll be fine. They'll get to the conference finals. We'll come back to the Celtics because the Lakers-Rockets series is absolutely fascinating to me. What have been your takeaways so far from that just bizarre showdown?
Sort of similar to that flip the switch thing. Like when LeBron James wants to win the game, he's just going to go ahead and do it against this Houston team. It actually reminds me a little bit of, sorry to bring this up, Warriors fans, but those, that 2016 series where he was like, you know what? Let me just go get the pick and roll that I want. I'm going to go get the switch that I want. And then I'm going to drive to the rim. I'm going to do my little spin move, and then I'm going to lay it up. And I'm just going to do that four possessions in a row, and nobody's going to be able to stop me. That to me is what he's been doing against Houston because of their lack of size, constructed to have a lack of size, but they don't have it.
Absolutely.
And then Anthony Davis has been unbelievable. So, look, that was always going to be the thing, but they still needed contributions from, you know, Rajon Rondo in certain game and, you know, this game three. And you, I guess you can't say that, look, you can't get that from Rondo every game. And I get that. And there's a lot of people now talking about, like, if they don't get that performance from Rondo, they lose. My argument is more like the Lakers are sort of built to get a performance from Rondo or Kuzma or Contavious Caldwell, whoever
They just need one guy every game, and there's enough guys that they're going to get that one guy.
Exactly. And if you have LeBron and Anthony Davis taking as much attention as they are these games, chances are one of these guys is going to have one of those games. And to me, that's okay. Like that, by the way, is a formula as old as the NBA. That's
have really good players at the top end and just find another dude to fill it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Before the super teams, before you were able to take advantage of this random cap spike and sign Kevin Durant, like before all this stuff, that's how basketball was played. And in this world that we live now in duos, like even with the Clippers, it's Chris Paul and Paul George. Who's the other guy that needs to step up? They don't know on a night-to-night basis, but it needs to be somebody if they're going to win.
Zubac.
Maybe it's Zubac.
He was really good.
Maybe it's Montrezl Harrell. And, like, by the way, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell have not been good in these playoffs, so it's going to maybe have to be Zubac.
Yeah.
And Denver's built the same way. If it's not Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, who else steps up? Sometimes it's Michael Porter Jr. Sometimes it's not Michael Porter Jr., and then they lose. I think it's
– You tell me Gary Neal can't fill up the stat sheet?
That's sort
Paul
of
Millsap, the ghost of Paul Millsap.
It's been tough to watch him. By the way, Millsap. I've taken Millsap off of my list as most intriguing MLE targets. I would not touch him for the Warriors right now, but
yeah. Okay. Millsap, but it is rough. You're right.
I'm not that worried about the Lakers. I think they win this series against the Rockets.
Okay. What do you think about this, this inevitable inevitable Boston Miami showdown? How do you feel about it? Because I know listen, that's a tough matchup for the Heat, baby.
It is.
Boston looks real good.
You've got Jimmy Butler that you can put on Jason Tatum. You've got bodies that you can throw at Jaylen Brown. You've got Bam Adebayo who can wreak havoc at the middle of defense. I think Bam is going to be the swing player of that series. Like if he's taking that 17 footer with confidence, like he did it those last two games against Milwaukee.
Absolutely.
When they needed him to do it. That gives Miami, I think, a pretty that's the next factor for the Heat. Now, the only thing I would worry about is if Boston can get Gordon Hayward back in time and bring him off the bench, that gives them a significantly more depth than they've had so far against Toronto. And Miami has had a lot of depth in these playoffs. That's why they've had so much success. Yeah. I think the depth and the Bam Adebayo X factor could give them the edge over the Celtics. But if they get Hayward back, I think it's a lot more even. And then obviously they've got this star power that Jason Tatum has who – by the conference, like right now with the Bucks eliminated, you can argue that Jason Tatum is the best player in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Yes.
And if that's the case, then you know, whoever, this is the case also in the playoffs, tale as old as the playoffs have existed.
Wings.
The team with the best player has a chance no matter what. And right now, yep. Boston might have the best player.
You did not mention a name. And if you did, forgive me. You didn't mention Kemba Walker.
I did not.
And Kemba Walker is a dude. He has been a dude his entire life. He is a 16-win player, as Draymond Green likes to put it. That is a guy who gets it done. And I like Dragic a lot. He can't stay in front of him. He just can't do it. And he's not a bad defender. He just can't stay in front of him. And I'm having a really hard time overlooking that massive mismatch. Is there somebody on Miami that you can throw out there who can stay in front of Kemba Walker? Because if Kemba Walker is able to get into the lane, the Heat are dead.
And Kemba has had so much success, excuse me,
easy for you to
Toronto.
Say.
Yeah, against Toronto because they play that drop defense with Marc Gasol. Mm-hmm. And so when Gasol drops back, Kemba Walker gets right into that sweet spot where he's 16 feet away and he rises up with that mid-range shot, and he's going to make that almost every time.
Making that now, since against the Miami, New York City.
Absolutely. Bam. Against Miami, they've got Bam Adebayo. And that's why I say he's going to be a factor there. He could trap Kemba Walker at the point of the screen. He could stay with him if he just gets by Dragic, if he's not going to go up there and blitz. I mean, that's why he can swing that series, is because if you take Kemba Walker out and he's not getting you 20 points a game and he's getting you 11 on like a 5 of 12 shooting night, and that puts a lot of pressure on Jason Tatum and a lot of pressure on Jaylen Brown. And Jimmy Butler is going to try to take one of those guys out. So that to me is what could sort of swing that series. And Bam Adebayo has had like the highest plus minus of any player in the playoffs. I'm making that up, but it sounds right.
I'm sure it is. He's really, really good.
It was the case after the first round. I'm not sure if it still is, but he's up there.
You know it in your heart to be true.
He's developed into one of these dudes in the Eastern Conference that you're going to have to worry about. I mean, I think there's no doubt that there's a top four centers in the NBA. He's one of them. Mm-hmm. And when you have a guy as impactful as that at the middle of your defense and being able to facilitate offense, who can play
closing games, which is huge, whereas other centers, you can't say that. That's a seven-game series, though, right? Like, that just feels a seven-game. Yeah, that one's going to be a bloodbath. Lakers and Clippers, I presume both of them will advance. I don't need you to pick a winner, but how many games does that go?
Probably seven. I mean, it would probably go seven. I think that both teams aren't – I don't think the Clippers are as deep as people have said that they are. I think both teams are pretty top-heavy, actually. Mm. And the one thing I keep going back to is that the Lakers' stars make each other better and the Clippers' stars don't. And I wonder if that matters in the last 3 minutes of a game.
I really like that take. We're going to end with that take because it's a damn good one. Wes Goldberg, read him at the Mercury News, East Bay Times, all that stuff. Fantastic breakdown of Anthony Edwards and more to come in the days and weeks to come. Dieter Kurtenbach, you can follow us on Twitter if you want to rot your brain. And we'll talk to you on the next Warriors HQ podcast. We'll do this again next week, and we'll have some clarity as to who's advancing in the playoffs, maybe some clarity on Giannis and probably another draft breakdown too, because why not? What else is there to talk about? Until then, adios.